Good afternoon. It is one bell of the afternoon watch. This is your Captain Joe up in the captain's chair, broadcasting to you live, unscripted, and unrehearsed from the Gene Bosch Memorial Studio on the magical Isle of Vashon. It is an autumn day here in the Pacific Northwest. It is an autumn day everywhere in the Northern Hemisphere. And the trees, the maple trees, are at their most glorious. The red maple that is over Mary R.'s gravesite is in full redness. It is a lovely day today, and it's made even more so because we've had some rain. My greetings today go out to all of Captain Joe's people who have already voted. I do not include myself in that congratulatory message yet. However, when I return to Captain's quarters this afternoon after I finish the broadcast, I'm going to go behind the radiator where the ballot, my ballot, has fallen. I warn all of you at election time to search behind the radiator for the lost ballot and the equally lost voter's pamphlet, of which for here on the Magical Isle, we have two, one for the national election and one for the state election. If you live in one of the towns in the northern part of the state of Oregon, or if you live in one of the towns in the southern part of the state of Washington, in other words, hovering around the Columbia River, the attack on the voting drop boxes, I think that Oregon has only mail-in voting, and I know that Washington only has mail-in or drop-box voting. Somebody, as yet unidentified, but I think there are some leads, set fire inside the drop boxes and some ballots were burned. If you live in those areas and you think that you are one of those, you are entitled to vote again, not voting again a second time, but voting for the first time with a different ballot, one that has not been consumed by fire. If you believe that you are one of those, I urge you to get in touch with the appropriate authorities and vote. I will be voting this afternoon. I will be completing the ballot, and I am going to put it into my postbox. So my greetings go out to everybody who has already voted, and it is my wish, my desire, and my command that everyone who is entitled to vote has been registered and will now complete that ballot and put it in. I, on purpose, do not do two things. I do not give you an endorsement from the captain's chair. And the second thing I do not do is tell you how I voted. One of the great things about the democracy in which we live is the secret ballot. And it is always my encouragement that you vote in whatever way your conscience tells you is the right way for this country. Whatever the outcome of the election, I will accept it, and I will be ready to continue to serve the flag that I have served since I was 17. And I know that I can count on all of Captain Joe's people to do the same. The binnacle list this week is a mixed one. First of all, my younger people, Sean in particular, has a significant medical visit today. And I am just looking at my notes so that I don't miss any. I believe that Kurt is continuing to improve, and I believe that because I've had no signal to the contrary from his family, with whom I maintain close relationships over many, many years. The other people, Captain O'Brien reports, I saw him today, and he says that he is doing better. It remains to be seen whether I can take that with full with full authority. But in any case, he is at least straightening up a little bit. So I'm taking that as good news. My friend Jay, who has had such serious cancer surgery, is in also that category where I've not heard that things have, I'm not going to say going south. You remember we talked about that last week. Going south is not a pejorative exercise to me. I would love to be going south in command of Polar Star again. But having had no signal to the contrary, I am hopeful and considering that he continues to improve as well. In my own situation, the Swedish Medical Center finally got on the ball and set up an appointment with me for a significant scan. The scan is the one that's going to tell us whether or not there's been any spreading. And in the meantime, I, as always, not only remain of good cheer, but I am up in the captain's chair, solidly in the captain's chair, and with full command of not only all of my faculties, but also in full command of what is happening and what is going to happen. And on all of this, do all of you have my hand? There were a number of things that we did not get to last week, and we're going to try to cover them here. One of them I am going to start off with is with the book this week. And it's a special book because it came from a special person and a special couple. The title of the book is All Present and Accounted For, and the subtitle is The 1972 Alaska Grounding of the Coast Guard Cutter Jarvis and the heroic efforts that saved the ship. And the author is Captain Stephen Craig, Coast Guard Reserve, retired. It's the story of, as the subtitle tells us, of a grounding of the cutter Jarvis, named for a person in the life-saving service many, many years ago, a very heroic person. And Jarvis, I have to confess that I have not yet read the book. It came to me in my post yesterday. It came from friends who, with whom Mary and I had a special relationship because for Fred and Gail, we were witnesses at their wedding. Over the years, Fred has been involved in many, many good things for the Coast Guard family, not the most, and the most recent of which is not the sending me of this book. That is the most recent. But he was part of the team that put together the reunion of all of the people that had sailed in the Coast Guard Cutter Glacier, the Icebreaker Glacier, hull number WAGB4. She came to us from the Navy. She's a one-off, a one-of-a-kind. And she is an enlarged wind class, of which I was the captain of the lead ship in the class, Northwind. not the first one in the class, but to me, the lead ship, because she was my ship. And so this came with a lovely note, and it has only been with me long enough for me to stroke the cover and to admire the photograph, which is the cover, and it shows Jarvis in heavy weather. It does not show Jarvis aground. I look forward to reading the book and to reporting on more of the story. But I acknowledge here, first of all, my appreciation and thanks for the gift. My appreciation and thanks, secondly, for Fred and Gail being in my life. And as I frequently say and will say here again today, I am the most fortunate of men. One of the things that Fred sent me was a fountain pen that had been used by his late wife, Sonia. And I am a user of fountain pens, and I am enjoying having Sonia's fountain pen. It's this kind of thing that keeps coming to me in my life. And one of the things that came to me in my life in this last week was a pre-birthday party that was held by my road family. I live on a private road, and each of the families that live on that road own a piece of it because it goes right across our property. Each of us is given an easement to everybody else that uses the road. Those of you who have been with me at Captain's Quarters know the arrangement, know the setup. It was these families that rallied around me on the very day that Mary R. died. We have become, I use the term, friends of family rank, and all of these people are friends of family rank. We use each other's vehicles, we move in and out of each other's houses, we use spare bedrooms in each other's houses when we have an overflow in our own. And it is the kind of relationship which has no antagonisms, it has no bad history, it only has good history. So the decision was taken to have a preliminary birthday celebration for the captain. And I was asked, as the planning for this festival went forward, what I would in particular like to have. Now, my sister Beener, yes, in my family, my mother's nickname was Toots, and my sister's nickname is Beener. My sister Beener was married into a traditional Italian family. Her father-in-law and mother-in-law, of course, are both gone. Her husband, Pat, is gone. All three of Toots' children have now lost their spouses. And so Beener had her mother-in-law who was born in Italy and her father-in-law who was born in Italy, and her husband, Pat, was the first generation born in America. Her in-laws came from southern Italy where the sauce is red. And her mother-in-law was Mary Conti. Mary Conti was about 4.5 feet tall. She weighed about 95 pounds, and she was one tough lady. She and I had a very loving relationship, and part of that relationship was she told me one time that when you come back, and this started when I was a cadet at the academy, and it continued all the way up to the end of her life when she was no longer able to cook. She'd say in very heavily accented English, she would say, and I cannot reproduce that, just as I cannot reproduce the old English from the Outer Banks of North Carolina. I can slide into a Virginia dialect, but I cannot do the Outer Banks and I cannot do Mary Conti. So she would say, when you come back from wherever you are, I will make brajol. Now, brajol is a regional dish. Those of you who are of Italian ancestry will know, if you come from the red sauce south, you will know what it is. But a quick explanation is that it is plank steak, which is pounded out flat, and then it is wrapped around a filling. And it is my understanding from Mary Conti that the filling is dependent on the location from which you come. So I said to Julie, who was to be and was the hostess for this particular event, I have not had brajol since Mary Conti died. And Julie came back to me and she said, I've never heard of it. I don't know what it is. And I said, well, look it up in a menu or some. Go on to Goggle, Google, Paintball, whatever. Go onto one of those and type in brajol and it will bring it up and it will give you the recipe. And sure enough, she made it. If there was, and brajol is, by the way, a labor-intensive operation. Mary Conti would work at it all day to get it just right. And whenever I would return, that was the occasion for a pan of brajol because it is cooked in the oven. So I had brajol. And then I was asked to select the vegetables, which I did. And I was asked to select the dessert. And I said, it's been a long time since I've had Cherry's Jubilee, and we had Cherry's Jubilee, and I thought we were going to burn down their lovely home. Because I looked up, and there's this huge fire because you light the alcohol for Cherry's Jubilee. It was a lovely time. I'd asked at what level of formality, and I said, let's make this a dress-up affair. And so all of the ladies came in absolutely beautiful dresses. I am indeed the most fortunate of men to be surrounded by people like this. We could say that this was a dress rehearsal for my big birthday celebration, which is going to happen in the O Space, which is the largest venue that we have on the island. And I have booked the largest room in that largest venue because the guest list keeps expanding. If there's any of Captain Joe's people here on who would like to and are able to come to that function, send me a signal at Captain Joe, all one word, at CenturyTel, all one word, .net. Captain Joe at CenturyTel.net. Now, I know that some of you, because you're on one of my lists, have received notices about this and you received the link. There is a website for Captain Joe's birthday. If you are not on any of those lists, but you hear this signal and you would like to come, know that a warm welcome awaits you at the O Space. And if you send me a signal to Captain Joe at CenturyTel.net, I will respond and I will give you the link to getting the word to Michelle. That is the Michelle of the kitty vending machines that we have all over the island. One of the things that came to me just today was that Pan American Airways is about ready to become viable again in a very unusual way. Pan American Airways, known all over the world as Pan Am, except in Hawaii, where it is known as Pa'a, has a rich history with the Coast Guard. Back on the 22nd of October in 1956, Pan American Flight 6 ditched on Ocean Station November. All hands were saved. The aircraft is at the bottom of the Pacific Ocean. The captain of the Coast Guard cutter that was manning Ocean Station November was Commander Bill Earle. Commander Earle had been my military law instructor at the academy. I knew him well. For all of the years that we occupied those weather stations, the one that I went to was Ocean Station Victor, halfway between Honolulu and Tokyo. It was there that I experienced my first, but not my last, Pacific typhoon. It was there that I almost got washed overboard, and if I had, I would not be sitting here talking to you today. On those ocean stations, we practiced over and over again how we would manage when or if an aircraft ever had to ditch on that station. One of the elements of that practice was to figure out what was the best ditch heading, because if you have a swell which is running contrary-wise to the wind, then the aircraft commander has to make a decision as to what is the best heading to get his aircraft down on the water such that he can get all of his people out. We had a nifty little calculator, a nifty little computer, a handheld computer, that was used to calculate the best ditch heading, but it was always the aircraft commander that made the final decision as to which one he would take. We always laid a foam. We used firefighting foam to lay, once the ditch heading was selected, to lay a foam runway so that the aircraft commander would have a point of reference. And if the ditching happened at night, we had float lights that were saltwater activated, and we would lay those out so that the aircraft commander, and God, we always hope that if we ever had to do a ditching, that A, we never had to do it at night, and B, we never had to do it except when it was an FA calm. The day that Captain Ogg, O-G-G, for that was the name of the aircraft commander of Pa'a Flight 6, she was headed from Honolulu to San Francisco. Captain Ogg made a decision as to what was going to be his ditch heading. He had lost one and then two engines. This was a Stratocruiser, and she could not stay up in the air. So he knew that he had to put it down. There are a couple of YouTube. Here we go. There's YouTube. I can't get around it. There are a couple of YouTube clips. And if you type in the YouTube search engine, Flight 6, 22 October 1956, you can see some of the films that were taken by crew members. It was the great example of a mission that was completely successful in the sense that everything that had been trained for happened. The aircraft, there is one film clip that shows her coming in on final and then hitting the water and then getting all of the people out. 22 October, 1956, 68 years ago. Bill Earle is dead. The Coast Guard cutter Pontchartrain is gone. Probably my academy classmates, there were two of them who served in that ship, and I don't remember who they were, but there's a really good chance that they are no longer with us either. But the memory came up in a Coast Guard history outlet, came up and reminded me of this, and I tell you the story, because if there was ever a great example of training the way you're going to fight and fighting the way you train, this one was it. Flight 6, 22 October 1956, all hands were saved. The next thing that is on my list to get a little bit caught up on is that in the South China Sea. South China Sea is getting really crowded around those islands, those little tiny islets that the Philippine government, the Philippines claims, and the Red Chinese claim. And it's really getting crowded down there. A few days ago, a photograph came to hand of one of Her Majesty's New Zealand ships, His Majesty now, because we have King Charles III. He's on the binnacle list, by the way. He is not doing well. And he is on the binnacle list as well. And the Princess of Wales, Kate, also. You all know my affinity for all things UK, my respect and an admiration for the royal family and all of its colors and all of its flavors. So it is His Majesty's New Zealand ship, because King Charles III is also the head of state for New Zealand and for Australia. So a photograph came to hand of a HMS Zulu or Z, depending on how you use the phonetical alphabet, ship, a replenishment ship, and on one side she had the USS Howard, an Arleigh Burke destroyer, to port. And she had the Australian ship, His Majesty's Australian ship, Sydney, to starboard. And they were all steaming along together, each one of them taking fuel from this replenishment ship. Three countries working together for the common security in that part of the world. But to make it even more poignant, astern was a Japanese ship, the Japanese Self-Defense Force Navy. So there were four different countries, one of whom we sought to destroy and sought to destroy us. Circumstances now are different. Times have changed. It was a great photograph, and it was of particular significance to me because underway replenishment is something that we did 60 times in Vietnam. That's how we lived. I was asked the other day at my birthday party what was the longest that I had been to sea without ever touching port, and I said the answer to that is 4 months. And the reason that it was for so long was that we were able to replenish underway on the gun line in Vietnam. The oilers, the ammunition ships, they would all come out. That's how we stayed alive, and that's how we were able to keep station for 4 months. Particularly of interest to me because I noticed that they were working at about 100 feet apart. And my preferred working distance to make the distance in which you had to transport things from the providing ship to the ship being provided, my preference was between 60 and 70 feet. What this tells you is that as you do it more often, you become more familiar And you become more, not careless, but you become more able to work at a more advantageous distance. And those of you who are veterans of the underway replenishment system know how it works. And I see here that once again, we are at the end of our time together. And once again, this is your Captain Joe up in the captain's chair. We never say goodbye. We say until we meet again. And as always, I am on station and watching properly. And next week, I will let you know what came out of that scan and how well all of other of Captain Joe's people who are on the binnacle list are faring. So watch out for everybody's six, because we are, as always, we need to watch out for each other. This is your Captain Joe on station and watching properly.